going to pick up in Matthew chapter 10. So let's take our Bibles, and we'll start there here in just a few moments. While you're going there, I mean, you've heard a lot of announcements today. I'd just like to say one thing to add on to all this. I had the blessing of growing up in the church, and it was a blessing. And as a result, my parents purposed to put me through the Sunday school of the day. And as I look back and I think back on my life, one of the things that I'll never forget is Adam Day. He was one of my teachers. Steve Barefoot, another young guy, a college guy, who came alongside. He taught us each Sunday, poured his life into us. There's another individual, I do not for the life of me remember her name, but she always was holding a tissue in her hand. She was an older woman, had that tissue in her hand, and she taught me and all my classmates all of the songs for kids, the hymns, and to this day, I remember so many of them because of what these people poured into me. You know, when I think about this past year and what we lost as a result of COVID, and for so many of our children, not having that kind of an opportunity afforded to them, to know the people as well as the instruction from the scriptures. And so as you're looking ahead, as you're thinking about this fall, if you were like us, you're looking for something, an additional help. We said before, allies in the faith, men and women who are going to come try to help give additional teaching to your children. I want to encourage you to say, consider it. Consider being a part and finding it there, because that is a big reason why we do it. We don't just have it. We don't do Ridge just for the sake of we can say we're busy. Frankly, we're all busy, and I ain't got time to be busy. But what we want to be is fruitful. And so if that's something that you find you need, I would encourage you. Come alongside. Go, like Brittany said, go to the app or brbible.org/events and get registered so that your kids can find their allies in the faith if they don't already have them. And I'll add to that, it's not just Ridge, but it's also Awana. They memorize a lot of verses, but at the end of the day, it winds up being relationships. It's the people that are pouring in to the kids. Makes a difference. When I did it, one of the young kids I had was Mason Rudolph, now the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, so you never know. You might be training somebody famous one day in the future. Matthew chapter 10. Imagine that you had a friend, and your friend invited you to come over to the house. You go over to the house, it's in the evening, the house is dimly lit. You're out there, and all of a sudden you notice that a door slams. Boom! But there's nobody around the door. It's just you and your friend. And it's freaking you out a little bit. And then the lights start flickering on and off. And you look at your friend, what's going on? I don't know. And then a while later, you're looking at the coffee table, and this candle is on the coffee table, and it just moves by itself across the coffee table. You think you're a little freaked out. Of course we are. But what if, after your friend invited you, another friend came along and said, hey, let me tell you what's going to happen. This guy is going to play a trick on you. When you show up, doors are going to start slamming. Lights are going to start flickering. And then, you know, the big thing that you're going to find is this candle starts to slide across the table. Now what? You're not freaked out at all. You were expecting it. We could use that old adage, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. Folks, that's Matthew chapter 10. Jesus is giving his disciples a forewarning so that they will be forearmed for what will come in the future. Now, he began, and we looked in verses 5 through 12 and speaking just to his disciples primarily, and he was letting them know what's going to happen between then and his death. But then from about 12 to 23, we find that he expands. There's some sort of this telescoping idea. And then we find several of the prophecies that were of persecution and difficulties that his disciples were going to have occur, and we see those in the book of Acts. But now we're entering a passage in verse 24 to the end of this chapter in which Jesus is letting all of us know this is what you can expect. In the first several verses, it was you, speaking to the 12. But starting in verse 24, it changes to the disciple. It's gotten broader. To everyone. Verse 33, to whoever. Jesus wants you to be forewarned so that you and I can be forearmed for what may lie for us in the future. Now remember, Matthew's all about the king And he's prophesying, here comes the king. And a lot of people are saying, well, if he's the king, where's the kingdom? And he's preparing his people to say, well, there's a now and not yet component to it. There will be a full kingdom establishment, but in the meantime, you're going to get a taste of it as the king has come. And now we know today, we the church, we're not the fullness of the kingdom, but we are the advertisement for it. We're the foretaste of it to the people who are looking on. Well, these people are not excited about it, and they're starting to find a rejection. At least Jesus and the disciples are starting to find a rejection, and you see that grow. And so part of the forewarning Jesus gives, he gives three warnings in particular, but he begins this way. Look at verse 24, Matthew chapter 10. Jesus says, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. It's enough for the disciple that he become like his teacher, and the slave like his master. Now, when a child grows up in a home, there are certain things that a kid will pick up, right, that begin to mimic your parents. One of the things my dad used to say when we were growing up is he'd say, how was your day? And we'd say, fine. And he'd say, son, fine doesn't tell me anything. And he'd want us to expand on that. Well, guess what? I grew up and I had kids. How was your day? Fine. What'd I do? Fine doesn't tell me anything. The kind of thing that I picked up from him, I had been discipled, if you will, to say, how do we explore? How do we go deeper here? Well, Jesus says, my disciples are going to pick things up, and they're going to start looking like me. They're going to start speaking and asking things like I ask. In fact, in the book of Luke, Jesus says, everyone, after he has been fully trained, will be like his teacher. So, Jesus is highlighting yet another way that we are going to be like him. But it's not something you do. It's something that is done to you. And he forewarns us to say there is a mode of suffering that every disciple will encounter. He starts by forewarning that you need to be prepared for rejection. If you like to keep points, that's your first point. The next several verses highlight this. Be prepared for rejection. Verse 25. Jesus says, if they've called the head of the house Beelzebul, that term means the Lord of the flies. It was a term that the Jews used of Satan in particular. So if they've called the head of the house basically Satan, how much more would they malign the members of his household? So the Jews were doing this. They had rejected Jesus. And as a result, he said, you're my followers. You're going to encounter this too. They're going to reject you just like they have me. Your actions are going to be imputed as being wrong or incorrect. People are going to assign bad motives to you, and they're not going to appreciate what you have to say. Just yesterday, in my newsfeed, this was one of the headlines that I saw. Staunch atheists show higher morals than the proudly pious. That's a news article. Staunch atheists show higher morals than the proudly pious, but then they qualify it. From the pandemic to climate change. See, their point, there's a new morality. And because of that, we care about what you think about the pandemic. We care about what you think about climate change. We care what you think about sexuality. And now morality is being redefined under those terms. If you hold to a biblical view of these things, Jesus says, you got to expect that people are going to say, you're not in line. And because you don't hold to our morals, there's going to be a rejection. And folks, this isn't new. And we just celebrated the Lord's Supper. I mean, back in the early days of the church got accused by having what was called the love feast, which is what communion was referred to. They got accused of cannibalism and of orgies. People heard certain things, and then they passed these kind of messages around to other folks, and before long, there was a maligning that was happening in and through the church about the church. It's not new, and it's going to continue. Jesus is reminding us, you need to expect that. When it comes, not if it comes, when it comes, be prepared, be ready. Don't let it just, you know, kick the slats out of your bed and have you just collapse. Be ready. But because if you don't hold to the philosophy, there is going to be a rejection that you will encounter. Now, to be sure, I mean, some of us, you know, maybe there is a reason for morals' sake, our own morals, that people might reject that. Part of my goal, and I know part of your goal, is that that kind of accusation doesn't stick because it doesn't characterize who you are. God is transforming you, and he's going to make you and turn you into his image. But that doesn't mean that people aren't going to confuse that or twist that. So you've been forewarned so that you might be forearmed and be ready. Verse 26, he says, therefore, you know the old saying, what is the therefore, therefore? Therefore, in light of the fact that this will happen, he says, here's your response, do not fear them. I love that. Underline that, circle that. Do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed or hidden that will not be known. In other places, Jesus said, a tree is known by its fruit. And when people encounter you, no matter what they might have heard about you, before long, who you really are begins to be revealed. And people will see that and know that. At a minimum, one day, God will reveal it. At a minimum, there'll be a time where everyone stands before God in judgment. And as a result of that, those who are faithful, those who are his, he says, there is reward, I remember and I mark it. It's not forgotten before me. So the exhortation to you and I, be open. Be open about what you believe, who you follow, and go public with it. Verse 27, he says, what I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the housetops. Can I tell you a little something that I've observed lately and occasionally fallen prey to? That when you start talking with somebody, no matter what setting you're in, and the topic comes up and maybe it's a little bit controversial, we sort of whisper, you know? At a minimum, maybe our phones are listening. But there's this, we just inadvertently, unconsciously lower our voices so that this isn't heard. And Jesus says, you know what? Sometimes you do have to consider your environment. You know, earlier you said be shrewd as serpents, but there's a lot of times where we just need to be bold. We just need to be able to say what we know and what we believe and what we hold to. And my goodness, if my phone records me and that's what I get judged on, then I want it to be what's true and what's right. Amen? Amen. Let it be because of what we really do believe, and that is what condemns us. So record these kinds of things. That could be great. But you know what? I can stand before you right now and I can say, yeah, this is what we need to do. And then when that pressure comes on me, I get scared. You do too. I get scared. And I take a lot of comfort in the fact that even the Apostle Paul got scared. In fact, one of the things he said in Ephesians 6 was he went to the church there and he said, pray on my behalf, that utterance may be given to me to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, that I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. Paul said, I get scared. I need you to pray for me so that I will stand firm. And I need that, and you need that too. But there is a calling that we are ready to do that. But if you do it, expect rejection. There will be rejection by some. And because we get scared, he repeats his command in verse 28. There it is. Do not fear. Why has he got to repeat it? Because we get scared. You know, do not fear. Don't fear those who kill the body, but unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Know the one who is supreme. I read that Oliver Cromwell was once asked why he was so brave. And he said, I've learned that when you fear God, you do not have any man to fear. Go to the book of Acts and you look at Peter, whenever he has to stand before the Jewish religious authorities, and remember what he said, whether it's right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than to God, you be the judge. We cannot stop speaking. That's the guy who got scared and denied Jesus. And later, God comes and empowers him. And we've all operated in that sphere, right? We've been afraid. But God says, no, I can come alongside you. I can empower you. And you can give a testimony for me. But there's a coming out, if you will. But Jack, if I do that, I mean, I can get hurt. You know, and let's face it, we can. Man can inflict pain and hardship and difficulty and sorrow. But Jesus reminds us that infliction is finite. The worst case scenario, and frankly it is a worst, is we can be killed. But Jesus reminds us really what they've done is gone ahead and put you in your resurrected body. Because it doesn't end for us with the grave. There's a resurrection that occurs and a new body that God has for us. And so part of Jesus's encouragement to us is stand firm. You'll be tempted at times, you know, with bad things happening to you. You'll be tempted at times to feel like maybe God is just not there. Maybe God doesn't care. Maybe he's being neglectful of me. And that's why we get the next verse, 29. Jesus says, are not two sparrows sold for a cent, and yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. So, what's the words? Do not fear. There it is. Three times he says that. You are more valuable than many sparrows. I don't know if kids do this today, but when I was a little kid, I had an ant farm. You know, not a lot of ants in it, but you put all this sand in and you watch and you can just kind of see through the glass as they tunnel all through it. And in some ways, it makes me think of this. If you got an ant farm for whatever reason and you have a child and there's a fire in the house, which one are you going into the house to take care of? All of a sudden, the ant farm doesn't matter to you anymore. You've got a loved one that has the priority. And God reminds us, as much as he cares for sparrows and as much as he knows about the hairs of your head, there isn't neglect or ignoring of his people. When you feel you're tempted to think that that's happening, he's reminding you, no, I care for you just like I would my own children. Well, Jack, how do you explain the times when Christians have had to be killed? When Christians have gone through torture? When Christians have gone through these kinds of rough difficulties? I don't know. I don't know that I can fully explain it. What I can say is this: God has a grand and master scheme, and we need to see our lives in the context of how it fits within the whole, not just within our moments. And sometimes there may be, we may get some of the why. Why did God allow that difficulty? Why did God allow this? And other times we may not get it this side of heaven. But Jesus is giving us the reminder, by faith, you don't forget, God cares for you. He knows you and he loves you. And he begins verse 32 with another therefore. Since he loves you, what's the therefore? Therefore, everyone who confesses me before men, I'll also confess him before my Father who's in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I'll also deny him before my Father in heaven. Now remember, we said back in verse 23 that that title, Son of Man, for Jesus shows that he's the judge. Here you see the judgment. And the point he's making here is when those who are mine look like me, they identify with me, they speak for me, they're not giving in, it's proof they are mine. They are mine. To stand firm is to identify with him. And so Jesus says, you go public. Don't keep this hidden. You go public, and when there's difficulty, you need to know I'm there with you. It was the Apostle Paul who said, I bear on my body the brand marks of Jesus. He had literally physical scars on his back, but he went public. Was he afraid? He stood because the Spirit of God empowered and enabled him to stand when it was tough and it was hard. So when rejection comes, ladies and gentlemen, don't be afraid. We've been forewarned so that we can be forearmed when it comes. The second warning he gives us, he tells us we're going to be his disciples, then we have to be prepared to have to make some hard choices. Continuing in the last verse, don't think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be members of his household. And he who loves father or mother more than me isn't worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the kind of choice none of us wants to make. Nobody here wants to. Whether it's relationships or maybe it's just particular circumstances, the things that are precious to you. And we kind of looked at this a little bit last week. But Jesus gives us the reminder, he gets the priority. You start with him. Start with him. Even if it means some of these other relationships, you have to make a choice. Verse 38, he who does not take his cross and follow after me isn't worthy of me. It's interesting Jesus would use that for an example, because that's not very Jewish. That's Roman. There's a reason why he does it, because every single one of these people probably, if they've been in Jerusalem, they would have seen a crucifixion at some point. And here's what Rome did whenever they crucified somebody. They were making a public statement by not just immediately killing you. They started you at one place. They put the cross beam on you. They marched you to your place of execution, carrying your cross, if you will, until you got to the destination where you were killed. And what it was a statement. You wouldn't submit to us in life, so you're going to submit to us in death. Jesus uses that as his illustration. Those who are mine have submitted. They've died to themselves. That's already happened. And now they continue to follow after me and are one with me. Verse 39, he who has found his life will lose it. And he who has lost his life for my sake shall find it. So, you know, this is the mentality that God has with us and for us. Not exactly the best motivational speaker, Jesus. You know, he doesn't come in here and tell you all these things that you want to hear and have you go, yeah, all right, excited. But he's laying it down. He's saying, look, we got to be realistic about this. And he himself would go through that as well. And I think often we are wired. I know I can't be the only one who thinks this way or feels this way. I'm wired to think preservation. I got to protect myself. I got to protect mine. I got to protect what's mine. And, you know, that doesn't mean that that's an evil thing. But at the end of the day, there comes a level where I may just have to say, this is not something I get to protect. I have to trust God to protect this and to protect me. And if he doesn't, then he has his reasons and he has his purposes. So if you got to choose between the extremes, a relationship very close or not having that, if you have to choose between the extremes of life and death, Jesus says he gets the priority. Follow me. Be my disciple. But then he gives you this reminder. But if they're going to come after you, they're going to reject you. They're going to bring these kinds of difficulties. He says, don't forget, it's as if they're hurting me. That's verse 40. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. We're identified with Jesus. Y'all remember when Saul, later the Apostle Paul, is on the road to Damascus, and as he's going, Jesus appears to him. And Paul's on that road because he's going after the believers. He's persecuting them. And you remember what Jesus said? Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting my followers? It's not what he said. Why are you persecuting me? Jesus reminds him, you persecute my people. You persecute and you attack me. But he gives a reminder, those who don't do this, he cares for and he minds. He goes one step further to say that he will actually reward them. And that's the third forewarning. It's that alignment with him and with God's people will receive reward. Three times Jesus says, don't fear. That's a big rabbi tool, repetition. They do it many times. Don't fear, don't fear, don't fear. In these next few verses, the repetition or the word of repetition, reward. He'll say it three times. Verse 41, he who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. Would you just note in that verse that disciples, this is where we get our link to the Old Testament. We are compared to the prophets. God's people who would go out and speak, represent God. And now as Christ's disciples, we go out and we do the same. Verse 42, and whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to him, he shall not lose his reward. So God says, I protect those. I look upon those who are caring for my own. You see this in the Old Testament. There's a woman, the widow of Zarephath, and she was poor. And the prophet Elijah came to her. And she at first is like, I don't know that I can really help you as well. But then she winds up helping the prophet along the way. And as a result, God met her physical needs, took care of her. Or the Shunammite woman of 2 Kings, and she purposed to take care of the prophet, put up a room for him to take care of him. And as a result, she had been barren, and God rewarded her with a son. And the whole point I share in that is not to say, give God a dollar and he'll give you two. That's not it at all. It's mainly to say God knows what's happening to his own and to those who align with his own and seek to help them, he notices. It doesn't go beyond his vision. He sees and observes, and he seeks to reward those that will help them. And any one of you who has a parent, you understand this. You know that principle. Because if you have a child and someone is not paying particular attention to them or hurting them or injuring them in some way, and then someone else comes along and takes care of them, helps them, bolsters them, encourages them, you love that person. They are your new hero. You invite them out to eat. You buy them coffee. You take care of them because you've seen they love the ones that I love. And God says that's how he feels too. And so he's not out there just oblivious. He's aware. When you feel like he is, he says, no, no, no. I got my finger on the pulse. I've got my people that can help in my timing. But in the meantime, you be forewarned so that you can be forearmed. And then he closes this, or at least Matthew closes this, 11 verse 1, where he says, when Jesus finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he departed from there to teach and preach in their cities. And there, Jesus' little sermon, Matthew chapter 10, closes. And now the word of God goes out, literally goes out into the countryside. And he's still doing that through you, through me. What do you do with this? Well, as a pastor, when I preach on a passage like this, let me just say up front, I feel very unqualified. And the reason being is because really, I think the most that I've ever endured is someone called me preacher. And they didn't mean it well. And then I became a preacher, you know, so maybe they were just a prophet. But things like that, that were said to me, that were meant to be derogatory because of what I said or what I believed. And there have been cases too, where in speaking truth or in sharing the gospel, I did encounter people through work who didn't want to do anything else with me. It was kind of like, I'm done with you and not really want to be a part of you. And some of you guys have gone through it as well. But that's about the worst that I've ever gone through. But I know that there are others. And what I've done is I've invited someone who can come up here and speak about an individual that they know. They told me about this past week, Stuart Dow. He's going to come up here in just a moment. Now, having said that, one of the difficulties we have is there are some things that we can't put on the web. And so for those of you that are watching, or for those of you that are listening to this via podcast, I'm sorry, but we have to turn it off at this point. And it's for the purposes of protecting and preserving those with whom this would directly impact, because the people that he's going to speak about are still living. So for those of you that aren't, or that are online, I apologize that we have to close out the service at this point for you. Maybe you can find somebody that was in the church today and get the story from them. But let me say this, for those of you that do hear what we're going to say, please don't post it on your social media. There are people who watch and seek these kinds of stories so that they can either expel or injure the folks that we'll be talking about. So I would ask you, it's what goes on in the tent from this point on stays in the tent, all right? Stuart, would you come up at this time and share with us?